Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofskin. Get ready. It ain't that peculiar, but if you cry for me and be my baby, then we'll be happy together. Build me up, buttercup, and hop in my vehicle up on the road, because something's got a hold on me. We're grooving in this time of the season, December 1963. Oh, what a night. You can't buy me love, never my love, but if we're California dreaming with tears of a clown, there ain't no mountain high enough. Wouldn't it be nice? Joining us today are the usual waiting on Christmas, including Kevin Livid High Jager.
Yes, all the time.
Kimberly, our River Deep Mountain High Game Master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Love it.
And with us today is an actor who is Tony nominated for his work in Next to Normal. Other credits include Sideshow and Jersey Boys. And he's also a member of the Midtown Men, which is some of the intro songs that I picked from. Let's give a big broad-waisted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
J. Robert Spencer. Welcome.
That was an incredible introduction. That was the greatest intro I've ever had. Thank you.
I pulled those from, I don't know which album it is, but I pulled all those from your track listing from one of the Midtown Men albums.
It might be the live CD.
I think it's the live one. Yeah.
That was great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. This is super fun. We're super pumped to talk to you. But before we even get to any of that, What are we drinking?
Tonight I went with, in my thermos, some ice cubes and some Pinot Grigio.
Very cool.
It's from Oregon. It's Oregon grown right here where I am, and just outside of Portland, Oregon, in my home. I'm just in my my office tonight. And my daughter's in the next room practicing her violin, and my son and wife are out there keeping busy.
That's amazing.
Perfect.
Kevin, you guys are held up in your houses as well?
Yeah, I'm in my studio in Manhattan still. And I am drinking a Tanteo jalapeno tequila margarita.
Oh, man. Beautiful. I love jalapeno tequila.
It is so good. You got to have a little heat. So it's really, really yummy.
Like behind you.
Exactly.
The fireplace.
My fire.
Yeah. Kimberly.
Got to keep it cozy.
Since I've made it to my parents' house in Philadelphia, I have rosé from my mom's fridge.
Yes, rosé all day.
I didn't look at the label.
And I am in still in Park Slope, Brooklyn, and I am drinking Cabernet Sauvignon from a can. I saw these at the store, and I felt like, oh, you have the can of Pinot Grigio?
It's canned wine.
I saw this on the shelf, and I was like, you know what? Let me give canned wine a chance again. And this one, if you can see on the back, for all of you watching this, it has one can equals a glass and a half, but it's actually like there's an image to it. So we won't make the same mistake we made last time when we assumed that one can was like one
can
of beer.
Don't lump me in. I'm not part of the we.
Brian and I assumed that one can of wine was one can of beer. So I had three and Brian had four, but it turned out that each can was half a bottle.
If you look at how volume works, you would have known.
No. This is how it turned out.
Yeah, it's just how it happened. We were tricked. We were duped.
It's true, though. Can of beer doesn't affect me at all. It's just like, it's cool. It's just a social.
Yeah.
But wine, a one can of wine, I'm like.
You lost it.
Out.
Let's
halfway through.
Ooh,
no
cheers.
Problem.
Cheers.
Salud, everyone. Yeah, let's do it, right?
Clinkies. Clink. So let's talk, what's your favorite musical?
My favorite musical of all time is Secret Garden. I love Secret Garden. I think it's romantic. I think it's heartbreakingly beautiful. There's nothing like Rebecca Luker going, you know, how could I know I would never leave you? And then Mandy Patinkin comes in, and it was really, you know, and but before that, of course, there was Les Mis, and that, but sure. Secret Garden, it just, the way it was done and the lyrics, oh, I could go on all day about it.
Oh, okay, my God. So
I do feel like that's, I'm sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you would be a really good, like, doctor in that show, like the brother.
No, I was in college.
Yes, that's amazing.
I was. And it's one of my favorite roles. We did it at the Shenandoah Summer Music Theater, which, unfortunately, yeah, will be performing this summer for the first time in all these years.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I guess I was, I had already graduated. I guess I was in my junior or senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And got to sing Lily's Eyes, man. I couldn't wait.
No,
it was so good.
Did you see that?
Follow Bygone Broadway?
Say
oh,
less.
Instagram, yeah.
Yeah, they shared a rehearsal photo today of Daisy Egan in the Secret Garden.
That's cool.
So that's so funny that it came up.
I'm assuming that you saw the original production based on that reaction or no?
Well, we took a college trip up and cool. we saw it as a group way
that's
back.
That's awesome. Long ago.
It was, yeah.
That's very cool.
Oh,
that's one that we could do it once the library opens up. That's one we can do at the library.
I love that show.
And you know, and I want to say that number two, honestly, you know, when I first came to New York, I'm 51 now. So I was in New York when I was, you know, 23, 24. And
mm-hmm.
and one of the first shows I actually saw was She Loves Me.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw Crazy for You.
Sure.
Oh, you did.
And
what a good year.
It was, and those two are my all-time classic favorites as well. Like mm-hmm. great musical theater, upbeat, Technicolor, you
sure.
know.
Yeah.
Those really made an impact on me. And I remember being in the front row watching She Loves Me.
That's so interesting because those are like, talk about three different parts of the spectrum. You have like the big dance show over here. You have the Secret Garden drama on this side. And then kind of right in the middle, you have this very serious, lovely show that has some wonderful dance moments. That's like a very well-rounded top three.
Yeah.
Well done.
Well, thanks. Well, I'm a drummer since I was in fourth grade, and that's why I love tap. I should have taken lessons. I don't know why I never did, but I never did. But that's why I'm drawn to like Crazy for You, you know. And that was an exceptional show with choreography.
Are you more drawn to things that you know you can do, or things that kind of elude you? How does your, you know, likes and dislikes kind of are based on what you believe you and know you have the ability to do versus something that totally escapes your grasp because you never learned it or whatever the case may be?
Thanks. Yeah, that's a good question. It's too much dance. And I've done it before in auditions where the dance was crazy. It was, I'm a singer.
Crazy for you?
Yeah. Da-da-da. Circle. That's why you're the professional.
It's the can of wine.
Yes, it is. You know, it helps. If I've walked out of auditions if the dancing was way too dancey. I'm like, I'm a singer who moves well, and there's a big difference. My wife, of course, has done 10 Broadway shows. She should be mm-hmm. in here talking and chatting it up. But, you know, she's got
a extraordinary
life. Yeah. I will. I'll bring her in. But she, you know, she was back in the heyday.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, she was working with Gwen Verdon, you know, and Ryan King in the original workshop of Fosse in Canada.
Sure. Now, I've heard of all of them.
Chicago. with Annie and James Naughton, and while she was in that show, she was a swing, but then she got Sideshow, and that's where we met.
Mm.
So she was rehearsing the day for Sideshow and then hauling butt over to Chicago mm-hmm. at night. Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Extraordinary. So let's actually talk a little bit about your career. You have your 2 for 3 in best musicals.
I know.
That's like a stat that most people do not have.
I'm aware of that. I'm humbled by it because I feel that I know that I'm like, this is very rare. But even you got to look at, I'll sideswipe for a second. But Sideshow, even though it only lasted 3 months, that's still one that is a, you know, people still bring up. And
oh,
it's
yeah, for sure.
Lives. But anyway, go ahead.
No. I mean, so I wanted to talk about kind of, there are three, from an outside view, they're three very different shows. Very similar to your top three. I guess talk about we can get into the specifics of kind of opening Jersey Boys, big hit, opening next normal Tony nomination. But let's do a high level view of kind of what you did to kind of capture those tones, both from a theatrical standpoint, from a vocal standpoint, from an acting standpoint. Yes, I know like the typical answer is like, oh, actors are going to act. But like, what was your process to kind of adapt to those three types of styles of musicals?
The Jersey Boys came easy as a musician because I had been a musician my whole life. And I listened to that music my entire life. I knew it like the back of my hand. And so hearing that and getting the phone call to read through the script, and I'm reading through it going, oh, I know that song. Oh, I forgot about that song. Oh, I didn't know they did this song. I mean, it was that kind of reaction to it. And also the writing was great. So I didn't have to think about the musician side of it too much, other than I had to learn bass guitar.
Sure. Did you learn bass guitar for that show?
Yeah. Couldn't wait. I'd been drumming and guitar playing my whole life, but I was, you know, big Rush fan. And I was like, sure, when am I going to learn bass? And then when I got cast as Nick Massey, I was like, hey, man, I'm doing the De Niro. I'm learning this thing.
Yeah, sure.
Now, Kevin Dow, God bless him. You know, he's an incredible bass player. He was the guy they had on 10, and I was down on 0. But I'm playing it all.
And cool.
Like, he taught it to me. So when I was breaking it all down, Jersey Boys, when you're breaking it as an actor, it really was the great experience as the De Niro. I was alone. My wife was in another state and I was in La Jolla. And, you know, it was intense learning choreography and playing and learning bass guitar and learning your monologues and your harmony.
Yeah.
But it all mashed together because it was just nonstop. It all mashed together. And all of the building blocks I had as a child leading up to this moment was the reason I was able to do it. If I hadn't had supportive parenting system that took me to drum lessons, took me to singing lessons, took me to dance lessons, took me to acting lessons and auditions, you know, those were the layers and the building blocks that made it easy for me to go into the process of working through Jersey Boys without having to know that I was even doing anything. All I knew is that I had to get these monologues off my back, out of my way, so I could just focus on everything else.
Now, was fall already your favorite season, or did you need to fall in love with it?
Yeah. Yeah. I love fall. I love wearing layers and walking through Central Park. It's one of the greatest things about New York City is the fall, right?
Right. I make sure Nick is the fall character in Jersey Boys, right? Okay. Yeah. I got nervous.
Autumn, there's literally nothing like autumn in New York. They're really like,
I know.
There really isn't.
I don't feel like I answered that question very well.
No, it's great. It doesn't matter.
But what I will say, when I got to Next to Normal, it was a whole other process.
Oh, yeah.
Totally different. And it was very emotional. And I was going at it from, obviously, at this point, I was 40 years old. And at that point, we had one child. And my wife was pregnant with our second kid. So now I'm going into this whole zone of auditioning for it where I have this whole father layer.
Mm-hmm.
And as a father, you think about the horrific what ifs, what ifs, what if I had a son, you know, that was dead, but still, you know, haunting us, you know, and what if, what if, what if, because that's sure. What we do as actors. But that was a whole different thing, that was a rock opera also, you know. Yeah. So it was really important to get that music out of the way. Jersey Boys was different. I get the monologues out of the way. The music was kind of like in my bones. But Next to Normal was, I had to get the music out of my way before I could really dive into the depth and the heart of Dan. But you know, it was really so seamless because Brian Yorkey and Tom Kidd and Michael Greif were the trifecta. You know, and the piece is easily sucked into it because of the emotion of it and the emotionality of it and the surprises within it. And then the fact that you're doing a musical, a brand new musical about bipolar depression.
Yeah.
It's insane. And you don't realize, you know, at that moment, you've got something that's going to absolutely break the mold and break Broadway forever. But it's not until you go out the stage door that you hear people's testimonies saying, thank you. I have a mom who's bipolar. My wife was making sandwiches on the floor like Alice was in the show. I mean, we were hearing all these stories. Hugh Jackman, you know, said, you know, it was like I was watching myself and my dad when I watched you, because my mom is bipolar, he told us, you know, after the show. So it really, I don't ever have to sign autographs walking out a door when I get that kind of human response. That was the true sign of how important art is for people's souls. And when the one last story that blew me away was when I was out last December promoting my Christmas song, Waiting on Christmas, I was doing a radio interview, and this just disc jockey crashed my radio interview because he found out that I was in the house, right? Mm-hmm. So he comes in and he tells me on air that his wife had passed away of cancer and he was totally depressed, didn't want to get out of bed, but he was a huge Broadway fanatic and he had already purchased months ago tickets to some show called Next to Normal. And he said, and I just said, I'm going to the show. I'll just go. He said, Bobby, I came back 40 times. Wow. It was therapeutic for me. It got me over my hump and the depression of the loss of my wife. I mean, I heard stories like that all that we all did. So, yeah.
I was fortunate enough to see like the second preview, I think.
Oh wow.
And yeah, I saw it pretty early too.
I will literally, like, that is one of like the top three experiences in a theater that I will never forget. Because hey. I went into it, I didn't know the album. Was the album out by then?
No.
I don't think so. So like there was like, I didn't know the story. I had no idea what to expect. I just knew it was like the Tom Kitt and Ryan Yorkie show. And like, I was super excited to see it. And Alice Ripley, like everybody's talking about her, but like, I do have to say, like, your performance was like truly next level in that show. Like you,
it was next to normal.
Like your performance. I mean, Alice obviously gets a lot of, accolades for her performance and she was amazing for sure, but like you were such an anchor in that show. And like the big, I mean, I spoiler alert if you haven't listened to the album yet, but like the big twist at that like penultimate moment in act two when like you, the duet that you had with Aaron Tveit, like that is like a moment that I will never forget being in the theater, because like I felt like my entire body was on fire. And I feel like that was really, as a young writer, like excited to see what new musical theater could do. Like that was so mind blowing because it was not even in the wheelhouse of theater to tell a story like that. And
right.
To do it so powerfully and so strongly with music that was like hip and new was just like really transformative for me as a young person. So thank you.
Amen. Wow.
Cheers. Let's play a game.
Cheers. Oh my gosh. Okay. Game time.
Great. Well, I, realizing that none of you can actually pick any of these things I made up.
True.
I'll close my eyes and pick four each of you.
Perfect.
Basically, we're going to play a sequel showdown. Thanks again to Kevin for this idea.
A sequel showdown. All right.
A sequel showdown. So these are four shows that do not currently have a sequel.
Okay.
Or arguably, do they need or want one? I'm going to pick two of us to pick two musicals and create how you could make a sequel for this show. And then the other two of us will vote on which one is better. And then the other two will have a chance to do their own. And then the two winners get voted.
Oh, I love this. Okay.
Okay.
I'm just going to say that Brian and Kevin go first.
Cool.
Okay.
Me and Bobby, time to figure out what we're going to do.
I am. I hope I don't look stupid on this. Oh, my gosh. I was like...
Okay.
Why don't I go, like... Point at which one you want, Kevin.
I want the third one.
This one?
Yes.
I want the pointy middle one.
Okay. So, Brian...
Yes?
You get Titanic.
Oh, great. I'm prepared. I already know.
Great.
Okay.
Kevin... You get Miss Saigon.
Perfect. Got it.
Explain.
You want to go first, Kevin?
Or should I pull?
I will allow you to go first, Brian.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So the sequel to Titanic is called Titanic 2, The Hindenburg. And it is about the the Hindenburg disaster, the big Zeppelin ship that blew up over New Jersey.
Balloons.
And it is basically, I mean, I'm not even going to like change anything. It just is Titanic on the Hindenburg. However, it's in a much smaller theater.
Of dreams.
Yes.
No, I'm trying to think.
I don't like that idea. I don't think that will work at all.
I think this is brilliant. And I think
it's
that
not brilliant. It's
people not gonna are going to pay a lot of money to see this. It's going to be in a small theater because blimps are not, you don't have as much space as a cruise liner. And there are some crossover people. Some of the people who survived Titanic are actually on the Hindenburg. And there's a big song where they have like, there's a PTSD flashback number. Like, no. Oh, yeah, we could do a flashback. We could do a Titanic Dream Ballet flashback. That's great. It's really emotional. It's like all these intersection stories, you know, and so Titanic 2, the Hindenburg.
Perfect.
And Kevin?
The sequel to Miss
You're Saigon. You're right, Kevin, it is perfect.
Okay, it actually is. So the sequel to Miss Saigon is called Mr. Saigon, and it is following Tam, Kim's son, who has now come to America. And so he's dealing with a lot of the like anti-Vietnam sentiments, the anti-Asian sentiments in American culture as he grows up. So the show starts when he's a teenager. And it's all about him trying to like figure out how he can be an American but also be connected to his mom. So he goes to Vietnam to try to like connect with her and like really understand what like happened and what he went through. And so it's this like young coming of age story about Tam.
Those are good. I mean, already, right?
Well, we all know Hindenburg. Titanic 2 Hindenburg is the winner there.
Not at all. That was so really good, you Kevin. Kevin, you are a writer. You can tell.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I think Titanic 2 the Hindenburg is way more creative than the easy answer.
If I did Titanic 2, it would be underwater. It would be the ghosts underwater the whole time.
That's what the dream ballet is.
Right, obviously. Right. Right. You don't get points just for creating a dream ballet, Brian.
There's also a Megamix.
Oh, there's Megan. That's the card that I didn't expect.
They just sing Joseph songs because that's what we want to hear.
Okay, so our turn, Bobby. Which one would you like?
How do I get? Do I just tap on your little face to get you on?
This one. Here.
If you go to the upper right hand corner, gallery mode.
Gallery
if you click
view.
Gallery right view, hand? You'll see all four of us at the same time.
Yeah, you're right. I can see all of you, but I just wanted to like, yeah, that one on your right hand. Sure. Kimberly, do that one. What is it? Jersey Boys, are you kidding me? Shut up.
Oh
my gosh. Well, the sequel to Jersey Boys is The Midtown Man. the sequel to Jersey Boys would be the great sequel would be to just catch up with the original Tommy DeVito, Bob Gaudio, and Frankie Valli at their age right now in their 80s, you know. Ooh. And see where they've gone since the ending of Jersey Boys on that night. You know, what happens at the final bam? Where do they go after that? So maybe
sitting in a diner.
Yeah, sitting in a diner would be great. They'd sit in a diner and then would they reflect like, remember when they did a show on Broadway about me? No, it's about me. No, it's about me. And that's what it is.
And they sit there for so long that all four seasons pass by.
But then, exactly. But then they did sit there, and then we go through. But then there's a little jukebox throughout it, and see as they go,
nice.
They're dropping a dime in the jukebox, and from that, that's when they go.
Oh,
this one takes me back to when.
So it's a jukebox musical with an actual jukebox,
right? But no jukebox.
I love that.
Just the jukebox, right? Are you taking a picture?
I am.
Yeah. Well, then tell us.
Was that all right? Was that a decent sequel idea?
That was great.
Yeah, I think so.
I just want to make sure that it still ends with them at the Rock and Roll Hall
Rock
of
Hall
Fame induction.
Yeah.
The end is a flashback of the end.
Let me tell you this story. I'm going to tell you this story about Bob Gaudio, the real Bob Gaudio.
Yeah.
Yes.
Daniel and Christian and John and I, it was during the Jersey Boys, we were doing so many interviews and so many great things were popping up. And we got done doing some kind of press thing, and Bob Gaudio was with us, and we're in the back of a limo, and it's me and it's Gaudio and it's Daniel Reichard, and we're talking, and he brings up the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He brings it up. That's why you brought it up. That's why I wanted to mention it.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know how we got on the subject, but at some point he goes, that was a really weird night. And he said, I just remember that I looked down the table and Nikki, my guy, and Tommy were off in the corner with a bunch of people we didn't know. Frankie was talking to Diana Ross, you know, and I'm just sitting there, you know, just looking around the room, just thinking, you know, what is going on? Where are we? You know? And
right.
But it was just like things like that, you know, would pop up. He would tell stories of yesterday, just on a whim, but for no reason. It was just like a nice little brushstroke that we got to get playing these guys. Every now and then we get a brushstroke. Every day he was with us, we get another new brushstroke to add to the show, you know?
Yeah. After, cool. I want to ask you more about that, because that what a special experience that must have been, where the people you're playing are still alive, can kind of help you with the paint, but you're still the painter. So let's hear the Next to Normal sequel, and then I'm prepping you for those questions.
The Next to Normal sequel. This got very dark in my mind very fast, but I think that's the show. And so it, in the same way that Wendy grows up in Peter Pan, it starts with Natalie all grown up.
Oh.
And then the ghost of her entire family comes out around her. And so it's a very old woman, Natalie, sort of dealing with everything that happened back then. And then maybe like halfway through the first act, she does some sort of spin and is young Natalie. And then she gets to like tell you about her life.
So she's on the Hindenburg. That's what I heard.
She is not on the Hindenburg. So maybe she goes to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. I like that. You two guys win, Brian. Sorry, I think you and I did not win that whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. Jersey Boys are Next to Normal. While I look for where I think there's probably a stage door picture of me at Jersey Boys.
Seriously?
Yes.
I think.
I mean, Bobby, you're the best, but I got to vote for the Next to Normal thing. I'm sorry.
It was good. It's a great idea. The older Natalie, absolutely. Maybe she's like Sybil. Maybe it's like Natalie's like Sybil.
Oh my God, that would be incredible.
An older Sybil Natalie.
How complicated would a Sybil musical be?
Pretty complicated, but also
pretty magnificent. If each personality had a different musical style.
Obviously, that's what you'd do. I mean, that makes the most sense. Each personality had to have a different musical style. You got to have the old woman. I got to go through. I haven't even seen that film in forever, but man.
You'd have to, literally, the first person that pops in my head who could sing anything is like Carmen Cusack. Like,
oh, totally.
Like, she can do like folk. She can do like legit Broadway. She can do classical. She can. Like, she has that voice that you're just like, yep, that works.
It's butter. She's really that country butter. She's got that folk butter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Oh, it's so good.
Good choice.
All right, Kimberly, is it you and me facing off?
Oh, yeah. Now you vote on which one's better. Mine or yours?
He just did. He said next to me, he said yours won.
Oh, so now we're trying
to... Oh, I beat you?
Yeah, you beat Bobby.
No, I mean you, Kevin.
You can. Oh,
so now we're voting on what's better, Mr. Saigon.
Mr. Saigon.
Got it.
Natalie's new normal.
No, I'm choosing Natalie's new normal. But then again, I'm telling you, Mr. Saigon is a great idea, dude. They're both great because they're both dealing with you know, someone needing to dive in deeper to find out what happened, what's
maybe
going on.
Maybe they team up.
You know,
they're dating in high school or like later on in life and trying.
I want a crossover next to Mr. Saigon.
Mr. Saigon is normal. Like,
yeah,
I love it. That's great. This was a super
sequel showdown. Was fun.
That was good, guys. Thank you for, you know, I'm I'm glad I didn't fail on that. I felt like I was okay.
No,
in fact, Titanic 2, the Hindenburg, would easily get funding before any of those.
Maybe like a Cirque du Soleil show in Vegas.
Right,
like,
I don't care.
Actually, I just sold the idea to Warner Brothers. So yeah. For all of you.
Hey, I actually was... Go ahead, Brian. You're looking at your notes. You're going to ask the next...
Go for it. There's no structure to this. What are we talking about? What do you want to talk about?
No, there isn't? Okay.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I was actually supposed to be in New York right now recording.
Really?
For this musical we've been working on called Uncivil, about the Civil War. It's a bluegrass musical comedy where I play Abraham Lincoln.
Yes. Cool.
We did it at the Nymph 4 years ago. God bless the Nymph.
Yeah, right.
And I know, right? R.I.P.
I couldn't believe I read that. How many months ago when that came out in the news?
I did a show at Nymph in 2015. So like that was like a really big blow to like find out that that was gone.
It's heartbreaking to find out because there's so many, it's so valuable to so many writers and artists. I mean, we all know that.
It was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had as a writer because I didn't just get to workshop a show. I got like a masterclass education in what it takes to produce a show.
Absolutely right.
It actually improved my writing. I learned like not to write for a specific show, but you also understand like what works in a theater and what doesn't. Like you to learn so many things when you're suddenly the executive producer of your own show.
Yeah.
Do you know what's so smart about you saying it that way is that you already, you're the individual that you need to be in the room with that kind of a mentality. Because I've done over 20 or 30 workshops and readings. And sometimes the writer is in that room and they just think they don't need to touch it.
Yep.
And that's where they get in the way. And that's why it doesn't move on. And when you sit in a lobby with Henry Krieger and Bill Russell on piano, and they're making changes to their already magnificent score, but they're making those changes, that's no ego. That's why you're professional. That's why you're a hit maker.
It was amazing because when we did our show in Nymph, we did our first rehearsal was the reading with the cast. We read with the script that we had, and we were like, what do you guys think? What did you feel as actors? And they gave us a crap ton of notes. In a week, we rewrote 3/4 of the show.
Wow. What was the name of your show in 2015?
It was called Spot on the Wall. It was about an actor who, he was a photographer and he had like taken pictures of his mom's struggle with cancer the whole time she was going through it. And so he got a museum signed on to like do an exhibition of his photography. And it was all about how he dealt with like his father and all these other people who like, it wasn't just art to them, it was real life. So it was like a question about like, when can art go too far, or does it ever go too far in like helping people express their emotions?
Wow. Good pitch. That really sounds great.
What was great was it was like, originally the character was a gay character and there was this whole like dad not accepting him gay story arc. And then like, as we like talked with the cast about stuff, we were like, that's not the interesting part. This is. And so we like changed so much to delve into like what was really happening. And the show that we did at Nymph when it finally opened was like worlds different. But like, I learned so much in that like 6 week period.
Well, Kevin, did you learn anything in Tuesdays in the corner with Kevin?
Kevin's Corner.
Welcome to Kevin's Corner, Bobby, where I have some really amazing questions that I Googled and found for you. Okay. They're random questions that are supposed to be fun to ask people. So we'll see if these are fun. Okay. So question number one, what was your favorite toy growing up?
The thing.
Yes. Still have it. That's amazing. Yeah, were you a big comic book kid?
Yeah. Batman. Hold on. Look at this. Look at this. Look at this masterpiece. Look at this baby right there. Oh. That's 1977, guys.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. That's collector, baby. That's Star Wars. This is the sequel. So the first one is this one here, this baby right there. Look at that beauty. What? Oh my gosh, you guys. Okay, so this is all the way until the trash compactor. Okay, and then it stops. Okay. And then this is trash compactor until the end.
Wow.
So good. So that's good. And the reason we got the new Batman, this is actually pretty killer, this one. So yeah, and it's cool to share all the old comics with my son. He loves that.
Oh, yeah.
Great Empire Strikes Back, actually, right there. Look at that. Anyway, all right, sorry. What were we talking about?
Let's talk more about Star Wars comics. I'm done with that.
The next question I have for you is, if you had to marry a cartoon character, who would it be and why?
Let me tell you something.
I love that he has visuals for everything.
It would be... would be olive oil from Popeye.
I love olive oil.
Well, because she's so absolutely sweet. She's a very, very kind soul.
Oh, yeah.
She cares about others, and she's very fragile, and yet she exudes complete love for her man. No matter how indifferent he may be with his extremely large forearms, you know, she loves him totally for who he is. So, yeah.
I love that. Do you think that eyebrows should be considered facial hair?
No. Interesting for you to say. I don't know. I've never thought about eyebrows as facial hair. This is my face. This is my forehead. I guess. Yes. So, I don't know.
Like the location of the eyebrows keeps them from being facial hair. I like that.
It's the border. It's the border. Very, very, very deeply set eyes. So there's no way you can even get up there. You can't get over this. It's like if they made the movie Free Solo, that guy wouldn't make it past this eyebrow. He wouldn't get past this huge hump right here, which is part of my forehead. He wouldn't make it.
You know, this is a good episode when we compare eyebrow ridges to El Capitan. I love it.
And then my last question is, if you could have a lifetime supply of anything, what would you want a lifetime supply of?
Peanut butter. Peanut butter. Santa Cruz peanut butter. No stir.
Oh, okay. Is it chunky or is it creamy?
Organic, non-GMO, crunchy.
Crunchy, okay. And this has been Kevin's Corner.
Yeah.
I'm going to make another margarita while you start over.
Let's. I want to go back to what you were talking about before. Let's talk about creating a role from scratch, the Next to Normal role. Versus taking someone like Nick Massey, who you can actually meet and tangibly like shake hands with, how do you go about, you know, creating something with your, you know, with the creative team from scratch versus creating something with the creative team from scratch based on a real person who's there?
Nick Massey, the gentleman I portrayed, was actually deceased when I got into the show.
Well, not great.
But what I did as far as research, though, yeah. You know, it's totally cool because, you know, I had to go and look up old newspaper clippings of interviews with people on his passing, his obituary.
Sure.
I found old stories of Nicky. You know, you can find interviews based off of, and I also drove, my wife and I drove to the Belmont Tavern in Jersey.
Sure.
We walked in there one night and I met everybody in the bar, and everybody knew the Four Seasons.
I grew up outside of Newark.
My gosh. Yeah, right there in the hub. Mm-hmm. So you've heard of the Belmont Tavern?
Yes, I know it.
Yeah, I love it. I hope they're doing okay, man. They call Jimmy Cuomo now. He's one of the head guys there. They call him Broadway Jimmy because he and I became friends when I got to that restaurant. So I learned about Nicky through all of his friends telling me stories. So that was the cool thing. That you talk about doing the De Niro. That's what Jersey Boys was. It was so De Niro. I was doing research. I was doing newspaper clippings. I was meeting with people and sitting down and chatting. There's that great scene in that wonderful movie, Field of Dreams, where the character played by James Earl Jones, his character's name is Terrence Mann. Mm-hmm. And it's this montage sequence of him doing the interview. And that's kind of what it was like for me. I was interviewing all these people and getting all these stories from Nicky. And also taking that knowledge and basing it off of Marshall Brickman and Rick Ellis's, words. So it was a combination of gathering as much information as I could from the real guy and then taking that real guy information I had to the powers that be and have us discuss it, you know, how we were going to convey Nicky. And then I guess the nice icing on the cake was coming out the stage door and having family members of Nicky come over to me. And I had it happen several times and say, hey, thanks for doing, you know, Nicky justice. You did great. Thanks for bringing my uncle back to life for a couple hours. Wow. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's take a little segue into your music.
Oh, great.
I know that you recently just had a single, right?
It's called Live It High.
Yeah.
And it was released last week on 420.
Oh, interesting.
Perfect.
I wrote it 5 years ago, I think, 4 years ago. I was on the road with my group, the Midtown Men, and we had 4 days in L.A. of nothing. And, we had probably 30 concerts lined up, and it was 4 days of nothing. And so there I was in this great, great pad in L.A. chilling. Mm-hmm. But I needed a guitar. I was crazy, just needed to write. I had so much in my head. And I ran down to Guitar Center and I bought this little mini guitar and I wrote five songs in about 3 hours. And one of them was Live It High.
Oh.
And it came out of me, you know, I never have the lyrics written. I play and the melody from what I'm playing brings out the lyrics. It's for me. I'll say ooh, I'll say ah, I'll say yada yada, and then something comes out. And when I was writing Live It High, the chorus was like, live it right, live it wrong, live it free, live it strong, live it high. Live it hard, live it loose, live it easy, live it soon, live it high. Live it happy, live it sad, live it broken, live it madly, live it high. Live it peace, live it love, live it all of the above, live it high. And the message really is, however you want to take it. Of course, there's going to be a lot of metaphors and puns throughout that people are going to take what they want. Mm-hmm. Now, first off, I did want to write an anthem for cannabis, like Jimmy Buffett wrote an anthem for Margaritaville, for margaritas with Margaritaville. Because let's face it, it's not there. They don't have it, and they should. And I think this should be the song. But and then just to go back even further, several years and years ago, now we've got it where it's being used more and more and being legal more for medicinal, for recreational. It's helping as far as it can be very helpful economically for our country. So there's all these positives that it brings. But the song is beyond that for me. And I wasn't even thinking that when that came to me. The chorus came to me at that moment when I needed to say something. Mm-hmm. And I'm 51 now. And at the time I was, 40, whatever, 8 or 47. And not that I have any answers to the life we're living, because I don't, but I know what I've done so horribly wrong in my life and what I've done so horribly right. Mm-hmm. And that's where it all came from. It's like the only way you're going to know how to live life is by living it as best you can. And every now and then you're going to slip up. But bottom line is, whatever you do, you got to live it high, as in taking the high road. You know, spirituality, God, love, peace, all of that. And I really wanted the song to bring guys like me and people like you and millennials as close to Woodstock as we could. You know, I wanted that song to bring as much. That's why I say bring it, live it peace, live it love, live it all of the above, live it high. You know, it's, I wanted I wanted that feeling that you get when you hear the music of Woodstock and you see the 4-day, the 3-day stock footage of that film of all those acts of coming together, of the live and the amazing footage of the old Dick Cavett shows with everybody having conversations and talking about peace and love and harmony and politics. You know, even the other night, the great John Denver was on a YouTube midnight special, and John Denver came on with Mama Cass in this beautiful way, you know, in 1971, was saying to people before they sang Leaving on a Jet Plane Together. She said, I just think it's really important. You know, I've been traveling around to the college campuses, and no matter who you're voting for, it's just really important to get out there and vote. That's all she said. But it was so interesting hearing this old footage of her in 1971. And here we are in 2020 saying the same thing. It's so important to go out there. I don't care what party you're on or where you're doing, do what's right. You know, and you know, in choosing, you know, choose how you want is what she was saying, you know, but it's important to vote. But gosh darn, man, there's so many messages back then that even at the midterm and touring across the country as the midterm and singing songs of the Mamas and the Papas and the Turtles and the Zombies and the Rascals and the Beach Boys and the Beatles and Buffalo Springfield, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and yeah,
so many Beatles. Animals.
Dude, it's but every song is about peace. It's about love. And in the turmoil of the last several years, as we've been touring the country, if it's been a horrific day on the news of something going wrong this way or something going wrong that way or something happening this way or that way, the thing that's been so surreal about it all is that that music of the 60s and that message of the 60s is more important now than ever. And we're out there singing lyrics and songs that made a difference in the 60s. And that's why it's even more pertinent that that music should be heard today, because the message is so valuable. I mean, when they're singing, when they're literally singing, you know, there's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear, you know? He's saying it from the 60s, yet it's something that we just saw in the news before I walked on stage. There's a man with a gun over there. Telling me I got to beware, saying stop, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. I mean, you know, they wrote that in 69, and we still sing it in 2020.
That's still fascinating.
Cheers.
That's so true.
Hello.
Cheers.
Let's, one more game?
Anything.
Yeah. Well, before we play your last game, where can people get Live High?
Live It High. You can go to www.jrobertspencer.com.
Oh, who's that?
First. And you can go to iTunes if people still do that. Google Play, Spotify, Amazon. Cool.
You can also find the Midtown Men stuff there as well. That's where I found all that.
You absolutely can. Yeah.
Amazing.
Let's do this.
And my wife and I actually, we're doing online classes. The thing that's great, literally, I promise you, a year ago, we were not reinventing the wheel. There's so many wonderful actors and actresses out there that are doing online services, teachers, assistant professors. We get that. We're not reinventing the wheel, but we were, you know, planning this and putting this together in the website. And then all this happened. And I was just like, well, it's a good thing we were kind of getting things rolling, but literally it's called Arts Full Circle. And we are hoping to provide undergraduates, graduates, anyone that has any auditions, anyone that wants to keep their tools sharp during all of this while they're sitting at home, you can get stagnant. So we have a contact available right there. If you go to artsfullcircle.com and send us your contact information, and we'll get back to you and we'll try to line up some lessons. If there's anyone out there interested, we are definitely, we definitely have the time, and we definitely have the years of experience that we'd like to share.
Yeah, I would say between the two of you, there's like 15 plus Broadway shows.
I mean, more so her. She's extraordinary. Yeah.
Oh, that's really sweet.
What game are we playing, Kimberly?
Just a quick round of Hands on a Hard Body.
Cool.
Oh!
So how we play this, it's a categories game. So you have two hands that no one can see in the camera, really. Oh. So your hands are down, and then we'll do sort of a rapid fire categories. We're all in different areas, so I'm just going to say what order we're going in. Does that make sense? So it'll go me, Brian, Bobby, Kevin, me.
Cool.
I point on my screen. Brian, Bobby, Kevin. What I just did.
That's people. people.
A little tricky. If you stutter, say something someone has already said, or just take too long to come up with something in that category, then you put one hand up. If you have two hands up, you're out, and we play till someone wins.
Okay,
cool.
We can do something easy first. Let's try. I wrote a few down.
Sequels to Titanic.
Stop trying to make Hindenburg happen, Brian.
No.
It's the secret, putting it out there.
Broadway theaters.
Okay.
Okay.
My name.
Are you starting?
Yeah, I'll start. The Jacobs.
The Niederlander.
The Schuberts.
The Lyceum.
The August Wilson.
The Broadway.
The St. James.
The Hudson.
The Broadhurst.
The Palace.
The Lyceum?
Yes.
Okay.
I said that one.
Oh, shoot! Oh. Did I do this?
Yeah.
Yes, you gotta get
But look, I haven't been in New York in over how many years? I can't remember these years.
Bobby, you get to pick the category now.
Okay. What do I pick?
It doesn't have to be theater. You can be anything.
Ooh. Please don't let me. Oh, gosh. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I was following it fine with you guys. I'm like, how do I start? What am I doing?
Pick a category.
Category. Music. Music. I want music.
Like band names?
Okay. Rush.
Okay.
Oh, Journey.
The Beatles.
Kansas.
The Monkees.
Bread.
The Rolling Stones.
The OJs.
The Four Seasons.
The Band.
Chicago.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Fun?
Yeah, that's a band.
Why are you questioning that? Ben Folds 5.
The Killers.
The Rascals.
Rascal Flatts.
Ah.
Panic at the Disco.
The Strokes.
Bee Gees.
Love the Bee Gees.
Love them.
The Jonas Brothers.
Yes.
Happiness, good documentary.
NSYNC.
Motley Crue.
Backstreet Boys.
Spice Girls.
98 Degrees.
It's getting hard.
Three, I'm totally lagging. Why am I blanking?
Two, one. Oh, that's
blanking. I'm blanking. I couldn't think of. I just blanked. I'm like, and how many rock groups are there in the world?
I know that's the thing.
That's why that one was hard.
You get to pick a category for the three of us to keep playing.
Okay. Okay. Comic book heroes.
Okay.
Captain America.
Spider-Man.
Captain Marvel.
Batman.
Iron Man.
Superman.
The Incredible Hulk.
Ooh, and my fave.
X-Men.
Green Lantern.
Am I allowed to say Wolverine when she said X-Men?
Yeah, absolutely. X-Men's a little bit much, but you can say Wolverine.
Okay,
Wolverine.
Absolutely.
Oh, The Thing? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Reed Richards.
Oh, did you say Reed Richards?
Yes.
You're correct. Okay, I thought Rex Reed.
No. Yeah.
That's not right. He's a, yeah.
Rex Peter Harrison.
Yes, right. He's a comic book about Rex Harrison.
What'd you say? Again?
Hawkeye.
Oh, good one.
Okay. Miles Morales.
Sure. Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, she's a Spider-Man. I'll give you that. Wonder Woman.
Ah. Come on, Kimberly.
Who?
Who?
Black Widow.
Black Widow. That's considered, yeah.
Ant-Man.
Ugh, the worst superhero ever. Whatever.
The Wasp.
Even worse. I mean, what? Why?
Flash.
That's pretty cool. I do love the Flash, I'd say.
Green Arrow.
So cool. Recently, actually, he's in the new Batman. They made him pretty cool.
Green Hornet?
I don't think Green Hornet is a comic book hero. I think that was a TV series. So I just don't think, you know, it was a TV series. You know what I'm saying? But that could be wrong, but I don't think I am. And if I am, I take it back. But, I mean, this was comic book heroes. And, I mean, like, from the pages. And I think Green Hornet was made for TV.
I mean, Bobby's been in a Pulitzer Prize winning show, so, like, I'll just take it.
Green Hornet started as a radio show.
Oh, yeah, I was right.
It doesn't count. You're right.
Good job. Yeah.
Okay, so I have a hand up, and our category now is women who have played Mama Rose.
I would have lasted that long.
And I'll go first. I'll go first.
I don't know. Oh.
Ethel Merman.
Tyne Daly.
Bernadette.
Angela Lansbury.
Patti LuPone.
Imelda Staunton.
No, that was mine.
I was going to say.
Bette Midler.
Yeah. Saved it.
I'm out.
I know. What? Who else is there?
Rosalind Russell.
Rosalind Russell.
Sorry.
Wasn't there Judy Kay player at one point? Betty Buckley.
All right, it's fine. So Kimberly and I both have one hand. What's your category, Kimberly?
Golden Age musicals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You Oklahoma. Go first.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Oklahoma.
South Pacific.
Oak.
La Boca.
Carousel.
Pacific Overtures. No, that's not what I meant to say. I meant to say Pipe Dream.
you meant to say South. I don't know. That's a slip up.
Out. I think she's out.
No.
I know we think Aaron Obata was old, but he was not in a Golden Age musical.
All right, Kimberly.
What's the category? Brian, you have zero hands?
Man. Brian's in the zone.
Oh, okay. Okay.
All right, so just get Kevin out and then you win.
Yes.
Ready? Okay. Leading Ladies.
Ooh.
Judy Kuhn.
Patti LuPone.
Alice Ripley.
Christine Ebersole.
Bernadette Peters.
Carmen Cusack.
Linda Eder.
Angela Lansbury.
Elaine Stritch.
Imelda Staunton.
Laura Benanti.
Tyne Daly.
You jerk. Sarah Brightman.
Kristen Chenoweth.
Audra McDonald.
Idina Menzel.
Tanya Pinkins.
Okay, good one. Let's go with Leslie Kritzer.
Carrie Butler.
Let's say
look around your room.
Maren Mazey.
Jenny Leon.
Rosie O'Donnell.
Grace, she was in Grace.
My fave, Donna Murphy.
I love Donna Murphy.
Did we say Bette Midler in this round?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm. Oh.
So Bette Midler.
Carolee Carmello.
Oh, that's a good one. Let's go with Betty Buckley.
Carmen Cusack.
I said that.
Carmen Cusack.
I said that already.
No! Yes. I'm out.
Brian Lynn!
Well, that does bring us to the end of our episode.
Oh, it does.
Thank you.
I was running out of battery. That's why I had to switch it. Come on.
Well, thank you for joining us. Again, you can find all of the, you can find all of his stuff on Spotify, on iTunes. You can go to his website. Again, the site he mentioned earlier was artsfullcircle.com. You can check out classes there. But we really want to thank you so much for taking the time during this crazy time to spend some Zoom time with us. But you can follow us at Broadwasted. You can find us on things like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Join our Patreon. We're doing so much more content now. Super fun. We have our movie nights. And
What's your next movie night?
We're doing documentaries.
What are you going to show?
So we're doing, well, we watch them beforehand, then we talk about them, so we kind of give homework. So the next one we're doing are Six by Sondheim, The Best Worst Thing That Could Ever Ever Happened, and Bathtubs Over Broadway. And then we're watching the documentary now co-op episode as a little extra.
All right, guys. Yeah. Sounds like you guys have a lot of...
We're keeping busy. But you can find us on iTunes and Spotify as well. On iTunes, rate and review us there. Five stars, please.
Yeah, thank you.
We end every episode, we end it with a quote.
Not today. I didn't write one down.
Really?
Yeah, Candy Girl, you are my world. You look so sweet. You're a special treat, Candy Girl. All I want to say when you're with me, you brighten up my day. That's Candy Girl. That is my quote today. But as we end every episode, we raise our glasses. Bobby, thank you so much for joining
thank
us
you.
From the West Coast. Yeah. You might be our first West Coast guest who's actually on the West Coast.
Yeah, I think this is officially the first East Coast West Coast episode.
All right, that's great. Well, cool. I'm
West Side Story kind of stuff, like East Side West Side stuff.
Oh my God!
Eastern boys and Western girls, Western girls, and something like that. I can't remember.
Thank you so much.
Western boys. That's what I should have said when I blanked. Western
boys. There's going to be a couple more that will hit you in the next couple hours. Like, after we do a Dirty Hands on the Heart Body, every, like 2 hours later, I'm like, oh, I know that one.
We're going to get an email in an hour with just a list of different bands.
A list of all of the bands in the world.
Well, thanks, cheers. Right. Thank you so much.
Cheers. Thank you so much. Stay safe, guys.
And did we do Zoop to Wop Bum?
No, right.
Oh, okay.
And every episode,
Zoop to Wop
Bum. Cheers.
Zoom to Wop Bop.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.